Welcome to the Lighter Side of the Dark Side. It's your weekly freak show here on Renegade Radio and all podcast catchers, Spotify, YouTube, wherever you're listening to us. It's the Dark Mark Show. I am Dark Mark, the goth comedian. And as always, except for last week, my co-host, everybody's favorite horror writer, Nicole Six.
Good afternoon.
This is one of my favorite shows because this is a Nicole suggestion. Where you tell me about somebody that's cool, usually a beautiful woman that you've been hiding from me, that's a friend of yours for a long time, and say, oh, she should be on the show. And that's what's happening here.
Yes. I've been a fan of Kira's work since the first time I saw her. I think that her burlesque is amazing and just like so cool. And it's this fluid balance of feminine and masculine where you're just like, when you see her on stage, you're getting an amazing, amazing performance. So,
oh, thank you so much.
And, no problem. So maybe I should introduce her. This is a woman of so many hats. She's another hyphenate. We love hyphenates on the show. She's a burlesque dancer. She's an actress. She's a MUA. You know what a MUA is, right, Nicole?
It's actually pronounced MUA.
Is that what you pronounce? I pronounce it MUA. Makeup artist. She's a tarot card reader, expert on the occult. So many things. And I'm just finding out about her, and I can't believe we haven't crossed paths because we have so many mutual friends, and we probably have crossed paths at some point in the past. But I am now a big fan of Kira Von Sutra. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks.
Just a cursory observing of your Instagram and the likes and comments show that we have so many friends in common. And I've been around the burlesque scene for a while and in LA. Okay. So I think we know a lot of mutual friends. And I think I've probably been to a show of yours at some point in the past, I'm sure.
Yeah, probably. We've been doing burlesque for a very, very long time.
I'm sure we've been in the same room at the same time at on more than one occasion.
I'm sure. I mean, I also kind of ran away. I moved to Portland last summer.
I heard.
So that might have a little something to do with the disconnect recently.
Well, I have a lot of friends in Portland too, so I'm sure I have some people that you know from there. Before we get started, because I need to match the energy of you two, it's been an exhausting week for me. Trouble the Cat's joining us. She just jumped off Nicole's lap. It's been an exhausting week for me for many reasons. So I have to match the energy. And I have this, if I can get in the camera. There it is. The best energy drink around. Ray's energy drink. And I've tried them all. This is the best. My favorite flavor, Baja Lime. I know Nicole's favorite flavor is the Voodoo Fruit Punch. They also have Galaxy Burst that tastes like Fruity Pebbles, Ginger Ale, Juice Box. And if you doubt this works, you got to see some of these shows that we've done live. And everybody's drinking Ray's, and just we're talking a mile a minute, and we were talking till like 1 a.m, just couldn't stop. This is the best. And the best part about it, zero calories, zero carbs, zero crash.
And as always, I have to add that it goes great with vodka.
Nice.
Indeed it does. And also, you can get them at GNC's. You can't get them at 7-Elevens. You can't get them at grocery stores. You can get them at GNC's, vitamin shops, but why pay full price? Use our 15% off code in the show description on either the podcast catcher or YouTube and get 15% off a case of Ray's energy drink. There it is. So, Kira, we may or may not have something in common. Were you born in Brooklyn, New York?
No, I was born in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Well, I know you grew up in Tulsa, Oklahoma. So there was some website that said you were born in Brooklyn, New York. I was like, nah, how do you go from Brooklyn to Tulsa? So that's incorrect. There's something on the internet about you that is incorrect. I can't believe it because the internet is always correct.
No, I was born, weirdly born in Oklahoma.
And what was that like growing up in Tulsa, Oklahoma?
It was not
fun. That face says it all.
It was not fun. I ran away. I ran screaming. Mm-hmm. I ran screaming. And my mom always knew I was going to leave. as well. Like when I remember being a teenager, I started traveling the world, luckily, when I was 17 years old. My first job ever was at a Schlotzky's Deli in Broken Arrow, Oklahoma.
Wow, and, big time.
It was real weird to be like one of the only punk rock goth kids at my high school. And, you know, it just kind of never really matched me. But, you know, I was born in Oklahoma, but in my heart, I'm an Angeleno. Like, I'm gonna tell people I'm from Oklahoma. I'm from LA, dude. Like, I'm a Hollywood vampire. Like, I'm a Hollywood goth.
Right. Yeah. But if I get this, if I have this correctly, and once again, this is from the internet, so it's got to be accurate. You started doing burlesque in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
I did. Yeah.
Now,
what was the burlesque thing like out there?
Okay, so there was none. I was actually in the first burlesque revival troupe in the whole fucking region in Oklahoma and Texas. And I started doing burlesque in 2003. So actually this year is my 20 year anniversary.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there was nothing. There was no YouTube. There was no costume shops there. It was horrible. We were terrible.
There was MySpace.
Actually at that time, I'm trying to remember. Yeah, I guess MySpace was there. That was about it. But like there wasn't the same resources. There weren't at that time, there weren't like burlesque schools, you know, there weren't like people. Now you can Google like burlesque school and pretty much every major city you can be in or visit in the United States at least has a burlesque school. You know, mm-hmm. there are people teaching this craft now, which is amazing. But like I went to literally Fredericks of Hollywood and Joann's Fabrics and threw together really horrible costumes and just kind of like paraded around on stage hoping for the best for a while, you know. But it was fun. It was just
I was gonna say, so you made your own costumes. What kind of costumes did you have when you first started out?
Really bad ones. Really bad ones. And the first trip that I was ever in was called the Spider Lilies. And I got invited. I actually never intended on being a burlesque performer or making that like a major part of my career and like public persona. But I turned 18 years old. Like I literally just got fucking fresh out of high school, 18 years old. I'm like, I'm going to get my tattoo. It's my birthday. I'm getting my first fucking tattoo. It's my birthday. And I went into a tattoo shop in Tulsa, Oklahoma, which at the time tattooing was still fucking illegal. Believe it or not.
Oh, really?
And yes, Oklahoma was one of the last places in the United States to legalize tattooing. And this was in 2003.
That's crazy.
So that's insane. But anyway, the woman who was working at the counter was like, I think you're really cute. And I want you to be in this thing called a burlesque troupe with me. I'm starting this thing called a burlesque troupe. And I was like, the fuck is that? You know, like, what is that? She was like, oh, it's like, you know, being on stage and like taking your clothes off and stuff. I was like, oh, I'm in. All right. Sounds good. I started dancing when I was 2 years old, though. Like, I've been a stage whore my entire life. My older sister was in ballet, and my mom would take me to go pick up my sister at ballet practice when I was a toddler. And she just like couldn't keep me off the stage. She couldn't keep me from running into the rest of the dancers and like just twirling around and being obsessed with it. So they actually put me in the production that they were putting on. So the first production I was ever in was, I think it was Sleeping Beauty.
Awesome.
Were you the witch?
I was a squirrel in Sleeping Beauty.
Oh, you were a squirrel. Okay, I'm sorry.
I was a squirrel.
You wanted to be the witch, but you were the squirrel.
Pretty much. But you know what? There's a lot of witches. You know, there's a lot of lore around witches being able to turn into animals. So what's the difference?
Right. Now, on your website, you say that in your childhood, there were occurrences of the occult and unexplainable that happened.
Oh, yeah. Every fucking day of my life.
In Tulsa, Oklahoma?
Oh, yeah. Oklahoma's extremely haunted. Extremely haunted. I mean, the world is haunted. The world is a graveyard. But my entire life, I have been plagued by the spirit realm and entities and ghosts, and I actually have a lot of PTSD over it, and I'm just now getting myself to a place of being able to like sleeping is not my strong suit, because I'm more psychically open than ever when I'm asleep, so I my whole life I've been kind of like combating shit that time.
Do you have a specific like memory of something that really like triggered you and kind of traumatized you when you were in Oklahoma?
Absolutely, I have many, but one of the first sorry, that's my dog, her name is Seven of Nine.
Trekkie.
She's a board. Anyway, yeah, I stopped sleeping when I was about 5 or 6 years old. I shared a room with my sister. I'm sorry, is she like, can you hear
her? No, that's okay. No, it's all right. She's probably barking at Nicole's cat, so it's all right. So you were sleeping with your sister.
I shared a room with my sister, and we had a set of bunk beds. And of course, because I was the older sibling, she's my little sister, I got the top bunk bed, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I remember very distinctly that the bunk beds were this like neon red, fire engine red color, and they were aluminum. They were like shitty old, you know, like 80s bunk beds.
Mm-hmm.
And I was sleeping, and this hand, clawed hand, like almost like a gauntlet hand, grabbed me by my right ankle, and it pulled me out of my bed.
And you're on the top bunk.
Yeah, the only thing that stopped me from plummeting to the ground was the railing of the bed. And I woke up with the railing between my legs, and it like, I had scratches on my legs from where the entity had like, basically like a glove like this, and it just grabbed me and fucking pulled me as hard as it could. And I could see entities with my eyeballs, like I see human beings walking down the street, you know. Really? Like I remember laying in bed being fucking plagued, like looking in my hallway, and there were entities staring at me, talking to me. Like some of them were very, very crazy, some of them were very almost like insect-like. Like I remember there's this one that looked like a giant ant. And typically that's like, if there's something that's an insectoid looking entity, it's kind of demonic in nature, or at least it's projecting itself to be that. So that was like a really big reason for me to stop sleeping at night, you know. And I would like cover myself up with my blanket. And I remember realizing that when the sun started to come up, that shit dissipated. Mm-hmm. So very early on in my life, I like to this day, the best sleep that I get is from like 6 a.m. to noon.
So you're a vampire.
So, yeah. Pretty much. But that, I mean, that was like a really big problem. And like, we just had unexplained hauntings in our house a lot when I was a child. And my mom, like, luckily my mom was very witchy too. She was a midwife. Like growing up, she had crystals in all of our windows. She had like cabinets full of herbs. She was a homeopath. Like she was very into that when I was young.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't like necessarily like she was going, oh, you know, just go to sleep, you know, but she, you know, she didn't know how to help me. Nobody knew how to fucking help me.
Right.
But
and so, but you never like went to your little sister and like, I know you always wanted the top bunk, go right ahead.
Actually, I did, but like she was like, fuck that. And then our room just kept getting worse. Like throughout the years, like the next 6 years too, there was a very big, like, I remember when I was like 12 or so, there was this entity in our closet that would enter in and out of the closet through a mirror that was given to me. And it would literally open the doors of the closet and like turn everything in the bedroom upside down. Like I lived in that movie Poltergeist. Like I have a fucking tattoo of that film on my arm because it was like living in this really insane horror movie, you know?
Wow.
And I remember trying to do an experiment over that and being like, I'm not fucking crazy. This is happening. So I remember one day my whole family was gone, and I don't remember why, but I was the only one at home. So I took a roll of duct tape, and the closet that we had were like the accordion style, like four panel doors where you can pull them open. And I made a big X in duct tape across the doors. And then I took like a scarf or some piece of fabric, and I tied it in a figure eight, like around the handles, so it couldn't like open. And then I left, and I went to my friend's house that lived behind us, and I came back like an hour or so later, and the tape had been ripped down. The fucking scarf was off the doors, and the doors were flung wide open.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody had been home. And I was like, see, what the fuck? This is crazy.
When I was a teenager, there was something in my house, and it followed me up the stairs, and my dog started barking at it. And that was when I realized I wasn't just dreaming or something. Like, that was really in my house chasing me. And I got so scared. I don't know how to describe the way it felt when it touched me, but it was like substance that wasn't there, but there was still like pressure there. It was a weird experience.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And like here in Portland, there are so many more spirits here and entities because of all the plants. Like the energy here is so different versus Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been a whole different set of learning how to deal with this space and like locking it down just to feel normal and sane.
What measures do you take? How do you protect yourself?
Oh God. How much time do we have?
You've got all the time in the world.
Well, number one,
or do we?
Jewelry. I wear a lot of jewelry. I do magic workings. I do spell castings on a near daily basis. I do a lot of work with the land. Now that I own a home, this incredible space that we have, it's actually a lot easier to do what I just call security. You know, like a lot of preventative measures.
I take it you go a step or two beyond just the sage.
Oh, sage doesn't do shit. Sage doesn't do fuck all most of the time, especially if an entity is not malicious.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and what I've recently realized is that a lot of the chatter that I have dealt with my entire life from the other side of the veil were my fucking ancestors. Mm-hmm. And my God. And growing up oh my God, my dog, I don't know what the fuck.
No, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it.
He's
just barking at an entity. That's all. Just go. It's fine.
There's like a truck outside. So she's.
We can barely hear her. It's fine.
Being a psychic medium is really overrated.
Oh yeah.
It's really overrated. It's not fun. Like it's really not fun. But working with the land, like really talking to the spirits of this place, and when you own something, when your name is on something in a piece of paper, that like means something different in the spirit realm for some fucking reason. And I have like, it's been a lot easier for me to lock down the space because we don't share walls with anybody else too.
Mm-hmm.
So if like you're living in an apartment, it's completely fucking different doing protective magic versus you being the only people, you whoever you live with, being the only people or the animals in your space.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of it is working with the spirits of the land as well, like just asking for fucking help.
Right.
Like, yeah. And I will say a lot of it is connecting with those ancestors and the spirits around me that are my guides and just being like, I can't fucking do this on my own. Like, mm-hmm. I literally can't fucking do this on my own. And something that I realized recently that has been incredibly valuable is a lot of the magic that I do is predominantly Celtic and Norse in nature. And reading a book of Norse practicing recently like changed my fucking life. And it said to put your guides and your protection on the outside of a circle when you cast it, as opposed to being on the inside of the circle. So. Mm. What that changed for me is I can't fucking describe how much better it has been for me, because now I said, you know, I kind of like command all the spirits around me, like, you can't be in here.
Yeah.
If you're going to be around me, you want to protect me, that's fine. Be outside the window. Be above the house. Be below the house. Be all around the house. But don't fucking be in here. And that changed my life. And I wish I would have realized that fucking 30 years ago when I was a kid, you know. But because now it's like I have the ability to notice and sense an intruder versus all of the entities around me that are helping me. Because a lot of the time when you're sensing things, you can't always sense the difference between something that is helpful or harmful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A lot of the time, even helpful energies and entities feel prickly and scary, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's like, just go the fuck outside. Like, I love you. I'm tired of hearing it. Stop telling me what to do. Fucking go outside and keep everything away from me. And now I'm like sleeping.
Well, I'm guessing you don't sleep in a bug bed anymore.
No, I don't.
I'm also guessing that one of our mutual friends, and correct me if I'm wrong, is probably Sal Santoro from The Crooked Path. I don't know if you know him. Mm-hmm. We had him on the show a few weeks ago, and then there's a whole talk about spirit guides. I don't have a spirit guide as far as I know. How did you find your spirit guides?
You absolutely have spirit guides.
Well, they haven't appeared to me, and I'm not aware of them, and you know, I'm the opposite of you. I have no problem sleeping, and I never very rarely dream, so I'm just out and then wake up.
I'm very envious of that.
Don't be. I overslept this morning and I was late for work, but
you wouldn't want to trade spaces with me. Getting in contact with your spirit guides is a whole fucking practice, though. It's not something that you just magically happens. Like, it's something that you have to feed and work on a regular basis, like any other relationship you have in your life. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to initiate with them. You have to talk to them. You have to like speak with them and establish boundaries and trust and ways that you can communicate with them and recognize what's happening around you. Mm-hmm. And the best way to do that is really connecting with recently deceased ancestors or loved ones that you've had. Mm-hmm. And one of the biggest things that happened to me to push me forward on my psychic medium path was one of my best friends dying of an OD. Mm. And he fucking wouldn't leave me alone, you know? And he literally came to me like an hour after he died, freaking the fuck out, you know? And I was like, they always come to me like when I'm in a bath, just trying to like zone the fuck out.
Well, he did die. I mean, that's kind of traumatic for most people.
It's true. It's very true. Especially when the death was unintentional or in a violent manner. And I do equate ODing with violence, especially with the way that it is presented to me in spirit form. Like, you know, a lot of people will deal with asphyxiation or you know, like losing their breathing over something like that. But it was, it was very interesting because he came to me and he was trying to get me to tell his boyfriend that he loved him, you know? And I was like, what the fuck is happening? What is this? And he came to me, like, we were punk rock kids. We grew up together in Oklahoma. And he came to me and started showing me punk rockers in my vision. I was seeing, like, kids with mohawks. And then I was seeing, like, an anarchy sign. It was actually kind of funny. I was like, what is this? Like, I know so many dead punk rockers. Like, you all die. Like, who is this? Who are you? Mm-hmm. You know, and it finally got to me that it was Frank. And he showed me, like, a heart and an ex, and he was like, basically like, tell my boyfriend that I love him. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I can do that. So I got in contact with his boyfriend because his boyfriend is the one who told me that he died. Mm-hmm. And he started projecting all of these numbers and dates and shit that made no fucking sense to me, but made complete sense to his boyfriend. So it was like a lot of confirmation that this was who I was communicating with.
Right. Well, that begs the question from me, the eternal skeptic, why didn't he just contact the boyfriend?
Well, I'm sure he tried, but like you're experiencing, not everybody is as tapped in and not everybody can make sense of what they're dealing with, feeling, or seeing. Mm-hmm. And the way that people perceive spirit is different all of the time across the board. Like the way that I sense and feel things might not be the way that you are perceiving them.
Right.
You know, everybody has...
That makes sense.
their own ability. It's like being a mutant. Like everybody has their own abilities in this realm, and like what they can do and what you can hone in on, right. You know?
And my ability is apparently to sleep. Nicole, you were going to say something?
I was going to say, not to change the subject too much, but while you're in Portland, what has been your, have you been dancing in Portland?
So I'm kind of on this like small, I'm not even going to call it a hiatus, but I've taken a step back this year to revamp a lot of my costumes and make new pieces. I've been doing burlesque for so long that sometimes I get really bored with everything that I have and I just want to produce new, different, interesting things. So I'm kind of in this moment of creation versus like dancing. New pieces are arriving right now. I've been in contact with some friends making costumes for me and stuff. And hopefully by the end of the year, I'll be able to unveil a few new dark, fucked up things.
Awesome. Yeah.
Do you have any hint as to how dark and fucked up it'll be?
Yeah. So this one of the main new pieces that I'm working on currently is really heavily rooted in the occult. A lot of what I put on stage these days is rooted in the occult, whether it looks like that or not. Mm-hmm. I mean, this guy in particular, but
yeah.
This one is, it's kind of been a journey for this piece because it started out in LA. It started out with a burlesque show called the Bootleg Bombshells based out of Venice. Mm-hmm. And they were doing a show called The Seven Deadly Sins. And they nominated me to be Wrath. And they called me and they're like, hey, we're doing the Seven Deadly Sins show. Do you want to be Wrath? And I was like, of course I want to be Wrath.
Yeah, that's, who else?
That's the best. Of course, that's the best sin. It turned into this interesting piece because one of my primary, my patron goddesses is the Celtic goddess of death and vengeance. And I started basing it on her. And she's like the mother of banshees. She's the mother of fairies. She's like a shape-shifting, dark, blackbird that oversees the battlefield when war is happening and, you know, carrying birds and carrying animals devour the dead of the warriors or devour the flesh of the warriors. And then that carries them to the other side. And this is just a very small fraction of things that she oversees in those realms. And now it's turning into this whole new fucking piece to different music, with different costuming. Just covered in veils. And my friend Sig Neutron right now is a really wonderful special effects. Yeah. So Sig is making me these pieces, to make me be this really fucked up, like crimson, bright red skeleton apparition. And the backstory is it's like Victorian and I've died of consumption. And it's like really horrific looking, where most burlesque, most burlesque in general is very, very beautiful and very sparkly and very high femme. And I'm a little bored of this.
Okay.
I'm bored of this. And I like to bring flavors of horror and like really hardcore dark occult energy that I've experienced firsthand to the stage and to deliver these art forms in a different way. Because burlesque, I mean, not to be an asshole, but I've seen it. I've done it. I've seen it. Like, you know, I've done traditional burlesque. I've been in that world. I've gone through the whole fucking spectrum of these styles and these musics and stuff like that. And now all I want to do is scare people and make them be confused as to why they're aroused or perhaps attracted to what I'm putting on stage.
Well,
I like that. I try to do the same in my writing. I want people to like enjoy it and feel guilty they're enjoying it and not quite sure the why they're enjoying it.
Yeah. So there are two performers in Los Angeles that I'm like besties with. And one, her name is Vanessa Burgundy, and the other performer is Christina Nakaya. And in LA for the past like 10 years, we've been performing together, making weird as uncomfortable shit as we can. Mm-hmm. And we like to say that we're causing people to have confused boners because they're like, why do I like this? You know, like what about this is attractive? I don't know why I like this.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, confused voters are always the best. And if Sig is, by the way, if people don't know, Sig Neutron was on the show Face Off. He's been on our show a few times. And I say him, I think he's a they now. I don't know what's going on there. But when
I think Sig accepts most pronouns.
Right. I haven't seen Sig in a long time, so I'm not sure what the pronouns are now. But I know if Sig Neutron is making a costume for you, it's going to be amazing because he does. Here I go again. Sig makes costumes for some of the biggest movies. I've been over Sig's house, seen all the stuff Sig has in Sig's garage, and just all sorts of. Some of the craziest horror stuff. And if Sig is making you something, it's going to be extraordinary.
Yep. It's going to be fucking insane.
Sig's super nice too and very down to earth. Just like a really great person.
Sig and Randy are great.
Sig is absolutely wonderful. And we have really connected through this project together. And I was actually talking to Sig on the phone yesterday about they're finally going to be sending me these costume pieces that we've been working on since the beginning of the year. Right. So Sig has really been putting in the fucking work for me to be able to bring this creature to life. And I got really inspired last November. My husband is a touring musician and he's not home most of the time. And last winter I was just
Is that good or bad?
It's good. It's good. You know, like our whole relationship has been him being a tour musician, so it's nothing new, you know. Right. And I actually think that we both enjoy the space, like we're very independent human beings and we don't need like it's
that's why I asked.
Yeah, I think it really nurtures our relationship in a way and it helps us stay in communication in ways that I think a lot of people don't. You know, but I'm obsessed with him. My husband is fucking incredible.
He's a sexy guy.
He is a fucking sexy human being. He looks like Thor. Like, if there were an incarnation of Thor, that would be my husband.
Right. And by the way, just as a sidebar, you might not be as sexy as Kira's husband, but if you want to be sexier, because there's nothing sexier than a great-smelling man, use our other sponsor, Tactical Soap. This is soap infused with pheromones, and they have three different kinds. Three different variations of three different kinds, Maverick, Bond, and Durden. And they have oils. They have all sorts of products. Use the code in our description. Get some Tactical Soap. You're not going to be as sexy as Kira's husband or myself, let's be honest. But you will be sexier than you are now because you'll be smelling great and you'll have pheromones and the women are going to go crazy. Go ahead, Kira. I'm sorry. I didn't mean
that was a really wonderful way to segue.
I do my best. There's another one coming, so amazing. We'll see how that goes.
Anyway, I was by myself over the winter with my dog, and I was watching the film Crimson Peak.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I like that one.
I'm obsessed with the costuming and the sets. And the colors and the way that movie is really presented and the crimson apparition in that film is really driving this new idea to come to life. So it's very like Banshee foretelling the doom of men that deserve it.
I love that. I love that. I am scared so much. I'm shivering, but I have a big raging boner. I get that. I love that dichotomy.
Yeah.
I love that. I love that. And now who named you now, what was your original burlesque name? Have you always been Kira Von Sutra or did you have a name before that?
Yeah, just Kira Sutra. I've been using Kira Sutra since I was a teenager, since I was 16, actually. So going back to punk rock kids in Oklahoma, I had a friend named Miranda and I used to drive this. I lived in a van, actually. I was homeless. I lived in this van for a while.
That's very punk.
Yeah. She made me a punk mixtape that said For Kira Sutra on it.
Mm-hmm.
And ever since then, I've just been using that name.
Okay.
Nice.
But Kira's my legal, like, real first name.
Right.
I gather from my research, but yeah, so it's quite evocative.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah. No,
it definitely stands out.
Miranda, you know what I have my whole life. I'm just gonna have to give props to Miranda for coming up with the name because she just handed me that tape. I was like, that's fucking catchy. I like that.
Yeah. Thank you, Miranda. Now, now you were in Oklahoma doing burlesque. You were 18. Mm-hmm. How long before you made the jump to LA, and how did you? I mean, that must have been quite a move.
It was a few years. Also,
you said you traveled the world too.
Yeah, yeah. You know, when shit was cheap, when I was a teenager, you could travel the world.
The kids don't know these days.
It was a lot easier to
back in my day when gas was $2 a gallon.
Yeah, dude, it was so much cheaper and so much easier to access at that time. But so I actually didn't move to LA immediately. I was in Tulsa and then I moved to Las Vegas and then I moved back to Tulsa and then I moved to Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of like bounced around and I got to Vegas and I very quickly realized that was a fucking terrible place for me to be.
Well, it's basically Oklahoma with neon.
It's, yeah. And you know what? I really don't like the desert, so I don't know what the fuck I was thinking with that one. But I moved there and I was like, this is terrible. I was just like a drunk vampire. I seriously didn't do anything before 9 p.m. Like, I went to sleep at 8 a.m. It was just too hot to exist. I'm just not a morning person. too hot to exist. I quickly, after I had a moment of clarity of being hammered and bloated and like looked down at my body, I was like, I got to get the fuck out of here. So I went back to Tulsa to regroup for a second and decide what the hell I was doing with my life. And my older brother was really like, I think you should pursue makeup as a career. You're like really good at it. It's always been something that I've loved. And I have a lot of siblings. My older sister was like, well, why don't you go to makeup school? And I was like, well, where the fuck do I do that? Like, I don't want to do that here. And she goes, well, you know, let me help you look. So we were looking at shit. And that's when I decided to move to Los Angeles to go to the Westmore Makeup Academy in Burbank, California at the time.
Mm, okay.
So I moved to LA in 2009.
Right. Because I would imagine the makeup schools in Oklahoma probably are a little different.
Yeah, there's one in Tulsa, I think, that's still going called Clary Stage that I couldn't be fucked to attend. And not to knock its curriculum, I don't even know, but it, you know, definitely wasn't in the space that I wanted to be in.
I've been to Tulsa. I've seen the makeup in Tulsa. It's a little different.
You know, I actually should attribute some of that Tulsa to how I am, because when I was a teenager, especially when I started doing burlesque, like I was always looking for really interesting makeup, really interesting colors of makeup that didn't exist because all I had was fucking drugstore makeup. You know, mm-hmm. there was Walmart, like there wasn't anywhere to seek out, like Sephora wasn't a thing. There wasn't anywhere to find cool makeup or even finding black nail polish was a huge fucking feat, you know?
Sure.
And when I was a kid, when I wanted black lipstick, as a fucking, you know, kid in middle school, I would use black eyeliner and fucking scrub it into my face and then put like chapstick on top of it. And I remember how dry and terrible it was. But I discovered this costume shop in Tulsa, Oklahoma called Top Hat. And Top Hat was where you could go like rent really terrible costumes for like parties or like whatever else, but they carried
it was like a Spirit Halloween store.
Not quite, but yes. But they carried a line of Ben Nye makeup for theater production.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the first makeup line that I ever used that had reds and blues and purples and greens and like really crazy different colors of eyeliner and lip color and stuff like that. So it like Ben Nye makeup changed my fucking life. And finding that little costume shop, like I was like, I used to call it clown makeup because I didn't know what the difference was between like theater or whatever, but I was like, look, clown makeup. And I remember showing all my punk rock friends being like, look, bro, there's fucking blue eyeliner. This is crazy. Or it's just like black and brown.
Right. But I mean, there's a big difference between the makeup that you have and what the local Tulsa girls put on for the Luke Bryan concert. So it's a, there's a bit of a contrast there.
I mean, not now, like now makeup is so easily accessible, and the drugstore makeup these days is wildly better than it was when I was a kid. You know, like you can get fucking blue lipstick at Walgreens now. You couldn't, couldn't find that anywhere.
Right.
I'm old.
Yeah, back in my day. Yeah.
My day, there, you couldn't purchase that shit online. You had to make it.
Right. And, you went to makeup school, and it's interesting from what I've read that you put makeup on some people that people would never guess you put makeup on, like Danny DeVito and Dan Aykroyd.
That's true.
Because you did makeup for It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
On the live show, not the actual.
Well, you did it for the live show. That's great. That's even better.
Yeah, I did for their play, for the Nightman Come.
Right.
Yeah.
So you made Danny DeVito look beautiful.
DeVito is incredible. He is absolutely incredible. He is a dream to work for and work with. Like, he's one of the best directors that I have worked with before. But yeah, I did makeup on Dan Aykroyd, and Ron Howard was the director.
Wow.
For that. I've done some wild shit, that's for sure. But makeup has really taken a back seat in my career these days, and I'm actually gearing more towards like Nikki here with wanting to write scripts and flip a lot of my psychic medium experiences with being tormented by spirits into scripts. I would really love to learn to be a director. Like, this is something that's been on my brain a lot lately.
Mm-hmm. Well,
you should start making some short films.
Exactly. And I have a lot of short scripts that I'm working on at the moment. So,
right. I can see that. But I'm curious, the Dan Aykroyd, Ron Howard thing, what was that? Because I know you did makeup for the Golden Gods metal thing. And
yep.
But what was the thing that Ron Howard did for?
So it was a Saturday Night Live presidential reunion skit that they put on CNN and other network televisions. But yeah, there was, I predominantly did makeup on Dan Aykroyd and Maya Rudolph. And who else did you make up on that shoot? That was a lot of people.
That's pretty big time.
Yeah. So Dan Aykroyd was one of the presidents.
Right. It was probably Carter or Nixon or something.
Yeah, he was Carter. He was Carter. And Ron Howard was directing that. And Will Ferrell was also there, obviously being Bush. And then
trust me, we all want to forget Bush, but yeah.
Jim Carrey was on set being Reagan. I was losing my fucking mind on that set.
Well, like, I can imagine with all the star power.
I was losing my fucking mind because even Chevy Chase was there, and I fucking loved Chevy Chase. I was like, oh my God, Chevy Chase is in here. I was like trying not to freak out. But
you caught him on the one day he wasn't an asshole.
No, he was like purposely being menacing, but I found it to be. I was like, please menace me, Chevy Chase. It's fun. I wasn't even doing his makeup, but he like, came into the room and I had all of my makeup brushes laid out and I was like working on prepping stuff, and he like got his face as close as he could to all my brushes and was like looking at all my stuff. And I was wondering if he wanted me to get pissed off at him, but I was like, Chevy Chase is looking at my shit. Yeah. But Dan Aykroyd was incredible. Like, he remembered my name the whole day. He made sure to like connect with me for us to have conversations. He's extremely intelligent. He really loves Led Zeppelin and rock and roll. He does Crystal Skull Vodka. Like, he was a dream to work with.
He loves the occult too.
He does.
So I can only imagine the conversations. And I tell people, because I've met a lot of celebrities, you know, living in LA, that happens. But
right.
Ron Howard is the nicest celebrity I've ever met, to the point that he was so nice, I felt like a real jerk actually going up to him and saying hi, because he was so friendly and was ignoring his family at the time to talk to me, that I felt horrible to actually talk to him. But was that your experience, or did you see Ron Howard on a real, like him and Chevy Chase being jerks?
I don't think he was a jerk. I don't think Ron Howard's a jerk at all, but he is intense.
He was working too, so yeah.
Yeah, he was intense, and just mostly because he's a perfectionist, and from what I understand, like he tried to get as many shots of everything as he could. So it was an extremely long day. Extremely long shoot. I think it was a few days. But you know, I enjoyed it nonetheless, and really had a great experience on that set, and being able to put that on my resume is super cool.
That's amazing. Yeah, that's great.
I used to do makeup for Danny DeVito for a time, had a horror film short website that was called The Blood Factory.
Oh, I know that.
Yeah. And so I got to go to Danny DeVito's fucking house. Hang out in his house with him and his family. Like, his son was helping him direct stuff, and his daughter Lucy was one of the stars. And then like Rhea Perlman was made us all a coconut cake and shit. And like he fucking had his personal chefs cooking for us the entire time. It was the best lasagna I've ever had in my entire fucking life. Hands down, the best lasagna I've ever had in my life. Like, pretty crazy.
It would have to be if Danny DeVito's private chef is cooking it for you.
Yes.
Who was the best experience you've ever worked with?
In the film industry?
Yeah. But if you have broader, anyone in general, like any experience you've had with someone that was just utterly amazing.
Danny DeVito was absolutely incredible to work for, because he really likes to foster a calm, peaceful, easy moving set. And by doing so, he makes everybody sit down and take breaks. Like, he basically makes everybody sit down and have tea together. And like, he doesn't let people work during lunch. He makes you relax. He makes you fucking calm down. And like, I think I was late. I remember waking up late, because at the time I lived in the Valley, and I was tearing ass in my car up the fucking like canyon to get to the other side of Hollywood from the Valley. And I was freaking out because I was late. And he came into the makeup room and was like, calm down. Like, it doesn't matter. And what's interesting about him is he used to be a barber.
Oh, wow.
And he knew about the process of makeup. He knows how to put a bobby pin on someone's fucking head to hold a wig in place. So he is one of the few directors that I've worked for that actually gives hair and makeup ample time to create a look that's interesting and works well, instead of hurrying you. Because a lot of sets want you to do a look that takes 3 hours in fucking 10 minutes. You know, you have assistant directors breathing down your throat going, how much longer is this going to take? You have 2 minutes. And I'm like, well, I need an hour. And they're like, well, you have 2 minutes. Danny DeVito's not like that. He's like, just tell me when you're done.
That's like, really cool.
And I remember being like, what the fuck? This guy knows how to put a bobby pin in a wig? Like, that's insane. Because his daughter, it was a period piece of the 20s, and she was wearing a white blonde wig with finger waves in it, and her hair is dark, and so, you know, we had to do the whole thing with it, and one of the bobby pins started to come loose, so he like held the set and walked over and shimmied the bobby pin back into her fucking head and just kept rolling. And I was like, who is this man? Like, this is crazy. And he has the fucking penguin suit in his personal theater.
Oh, don't tell me that. Oh my goodness.
And I was like, when I was doing makeup for Always Sunny, I had to be like, okay, I don't want to make you uncomfortable, but I'm fucking obsessed with Batman Returns. Like, that's one of my favorite films of all time. Like, Catwoman, Michelle Pfeiffer, Catwoman, she's my fucking bitch, dude. Like, I'm obsessed with that shit. And he was like, oh, you saw it? I was like, yes. Yes,
yeah, she helped awaken my sexuality in that movie for sure.
For real. For real.
I think she helped awaken a lot of people's sexuality in that movie.
Yes.
Probably Danny DeVito's too.
Yeah.
Burlesque was really, really hot about 10 years ago. And yeah. I don't know if it's still as hot in LA. I mean, I know there was a pandemic that in there, but you really hit it when it was really peaking.
Pandemic really fucking ruined a lot of shit, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm such a niche performer that I'm not like one of the cool kids that gets hired on higher productions of things, because I'm not a carbon copy of Catherine Delish, i.e. Dita Von Teese. You know, like most productions want that pretty perfect posy woman. And I want to be a banshee skeletal apparition that devours your fucking arm. You know, like I'm a little bit of a different breed than most performers, I think. But yeah, I did a lot of cool shit in the scene, but I don't know. It got dwindled down to me really only performing a few shows in Los Angeles before I left, because I don't perform to traditional music. It's really fucking boring to me.
Did you feel like an outcast in the burlesque scene? Because I know you were very, very respected and
outcast is not the right word. I wouldn't say that I'm an outcast, but very like niche. I'm not gonna make something to fit a theme either, which is a very like West Coast burlesque thing, where they, even here in Portland, like most shows are themed with certain things, and I'm not creating an entire fucking world for your show, if just to be in your show.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't care.
Right.
If I have something that just happens to fit in this theme, or that we can fucking squeeze in there, then sure, I would love to do it, but I'm not, like, I perform to entertain myself and to unleash demons and animals that live within me, and everybody else, you know, just happens to get the benefits of that. I'm not doing it for anybody else.
Right. Have you had, can you describe like a transcendent moment like that on stage where the demons were released and there was just a palpable feeling in the room?
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, every time I do my Anubis act, it's actually an invocation of Anubis.
Mm-hmm.
When I started doing the Wrath, the first time I did the Wrath act and the second time I did Wrath, they were both invocations of my patron goddess, the Morrigan.
Mm-hmm.
And the Morrigan is like, you invoke her for war, you invoke her for certain instances. And there's footage of me performing this Wrath act and photos of me where it's not my face. Like it was very much like a ritual possession of that goddess and that those energies that I was calling up to do my bidding. And sometimes in those moments, I'll use it to direct it towards shit that I need, or even people in the audience. Like, so for instance, when I'm working with Anubis, when I do the invocation of him, or his Egyptian name is actually Anpu, but everybody calls him Anubis, that was his Greek name.
Mm-hmm.
I'm working with people's karmas, because he's a god of karma, he's a god of time, he's a god of judgment, and more predominantly the Egyptian god of funerals and like the guide to the dead. Mm. He's not the god of the dead, he's the guide to the dead, because Osiris is the god of the dead.
Right.
But you know, in this act, I will mummify somebody's head quickly with some gauze that I've actually blessed and brought like energies of healing for people. And then doing the Wrath, which is now turning into this banshee, I actually will hex my enemies on stage. Wow. And enemies of the state, as I would like to say.
So back up. So there's video of your face changing on stage?
Yeah.
Hmm.
I'll have to find it, but there's a video that my friend Chrissy, I think Chrissy took, of me doing this Wrath act, invoking Morrigan. And in particular, there was two men that I was aiming this shit at that have been abusers to me in my life. And my eyes go red. Like in the video, my eyes are fucking as red as my eyeliner, like really insane. And you can see the shift of where the spirit is like there. Yeah. So
that's very cool.
I think doing like even creating like this crimson apparition that I'm working on right now will be even crazier.
Wow.
Though the vibe will be different. The vibe will be different because the original song that I was dancing to was 25 Years by Pantera, which is a very fucked up dark song about being abused. and dealing with an abusive father. And the best part about that song, though, is when he says, "We're fucking you back." I like lose my shit during the part.
Right. But
yeah, I mean, I use the time purposefully. I use the time and the space of the stage and the energy of the crowd, because I am an energy vampire when I'm performing. If there's no crowd there, it's like practicing. And the pandemic really fucking showed me that about myself, because the Bootleg Bombshells were doing shows online.
Yeah.
And they turned a pole studio in the Valley basically into a TV studio to start filming performers and strippers doing their jobs, and then putting together a whole Zoom show where people were attending and tipping, you know, online. And I remember going, they made me come early too. I had to be there at noon, and I had to be there in full goth drag in the fucking Valley in the middle of the summer, and just being like, this is terrible. So I had to do the run twice, because the first time I did it, I was calling myself Kira Von Sleepy, and I was like, I'm not here. This is too early for me. But I remember doing my Anubis act for that. And in the beginning of the act, like, I come out very like dark, covered in black velvet, and then I bust open my cape, and there's all this gold, sparkly, glittery, crazy energy happening. And you know, usually the crowd is very excited about this. So in this act, doing it for recording, I open my cape, and then nobody's like, "Wee!" And I'm like, "Aw." there's no energy for me to fucking feed off of and grab right now. This is wild. Right. Yeah, it felt like filming me practicing.
But it's, I mean, you know, even, you know, doing the Zoom comedy shows, at least they're laughing. When you do a burlesque, they just, there's nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure there's people jerking off, but that's about it. And you know, that energy.
I hope they keep that to themselves if that's happening. But it's like,
well, no, it's like under the desk. Yeah. Well, trust me, that's probably happened at my Zoom comedy shows too. But speaking of that, I read some interview with you, and it was quite a while ago, but you were talking about pasties falling off. How many times has that happened?
Yeah, my left boob has taken a whole West Coast tour before. My titty has come out in Seattle, San Francisco, Hollywood, the first time I ever performed.
So it doesn't happen on the West Coast or the Midwest, or the East Coast or the Midwest, just the West Coast?
The West Coast has been the star for some reason.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, the pasty journey has been interesting, because when I first started doing burlesque in Tulsa, like, we didn't have resources. We didn't know how to make pasties. We didn't know what we were doing. And the first time I ever performed, everything came off. Everything fell off.
Right.
And that was highly illegal in Oklahoma at the time. You know? And the first time,
well, if tattoos were illegal, yeah, that was illegal too.
Legit. And the first time I performed in Los Angeles as an Angelino, I was dancing at a show called the Monday Night Tees. It was at the Three of Clubs in Hollywood.
I remember, yeah. We've had
Lily. Lily Von Stepp was running.
We had Lily on the show. Another mutual friend, like. Everybody I know, you know, we have the same friends, and nobody ever introduced us. But yeah, I know.
That's weird.
So weird. Go ahead. So yeah, that show was great. But you were on that show.
Yeah, I was doing a an act to Led Zeppelin's Heartbreaker, and my left titty came out, and I got in trouble. I got in severe trouble by Lily by that one. She was like, "Don't you ever fucking do that again." I was like, "It just happened." But I like it. I make like a whole dramatic expression of being like, "And here's my breast. Give me money."
Yeah. If I had your breast, I would too.
Yeah, like, give me the money.
And I would imagine when that happens, which is always an accident, but more money.
You know what's fucked up about that? A lot of burlesque, not so much. That's a big problem that I found with productions in LA versus Portland, actually, is where Portland is a stripper town. Most shows here are run by strippers, so they're very tip forward. They're very, like, if you're not coming to the show to tip, don't come. And in LA, they don't procure tips the same way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sad.
When I went to a drag bingo thing, and I didn't bring any ones with me, and there was independent drag burlesque sets, and I felt bad I couldn't tip. I'm like, oh no. So they came over to our table and they were giving it their all, and then afterwards they hold out like the tip hat, and I'm just like, I'm sorry.
Yeah, so Portland gets around that by creating pieces of paper that they put on every table that has QR codes to people's Venmos and PayPals and Cash Apps. So you can fucking just direct them on your phone.
Well, that's the future. That is the future. Nobody has cash anymore.
Bootleg Bombshells was doing that in LA. That was one of the shows that I did all the time, because there actually was tipping in that show.
Mm-hmm.
And they just let me be really strange.
Right. So I mean, where does the time go? It's already been an hour, but I do have a couple other questions for you now. If you could hang on, I don't want to keep you long, because I know your dog's probably still barking in the background, but
it's okay.
And I know you were talking about out-of-body experiences, and that I didn't segue when I should have, because our other sponsor is Renegade CBD. So if you want to have out-of-body experiences, go to renegadecbd.com. And also there's bath bombs and other things, white chocolate, gummies. It's really, really good. RenegadeCBD.com. You have a tattoo, if I'm not mistaken, because I did the copious amounts of research on you, of Betty Page.
Yeah.
What is it about her that still appeals all these years later? Why is she such an icon?
I was so fucking obsessed with Betty Page when I was a teenager, and in my early career of modeling and doing burlesque, because she did both of those things. Mm-hmm. And she was really a renegade, as we were using this word, with being a sexual icon and really perpetuating a lot of fetish and burlesque and pinup. And her style of modeling was completely different than everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
And I would get everything I could of her, like any books, any postcards, any movies, any films, any clips, anything I could do to like learn about her.
Mm-hmm.
Part of it was her look, you know, part of it was her famous haircut, her Betty bangs. You know, of course I had Betty.
And you had Betty bangs, I'm sure.
For a second, I liked rockabilly, and then it bored the fucking tears off my, you know, I was just like, oh, this is so boring, I can't do this.
Although you performed at a lot of rockabilly festivals.
I did. I've done like rockabilly, psychabilly, punk rock, heavy metal, all that shit. But Betty really drove a lot of stuff for me just by fandom. And, I did pinup modeling for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And studying her photos and studying her facial expressions, because she was one of the first pinup models that I really liked, because she modeled with her entire body. It wasn't just her face or her titties or something like that. She very much was meticulous about her hand shapes and the shape she was making with her body and the lines that she created in photographs. And a lot of it was very awkward for her as well as a model. Like, she was thrown into a lot of awkward situations and made the best of it and did really wonderful. Like, most of the films that she was starred in, fetish films, burlesque stuff, they would just tell her to dance around and then they would add music to it later. So sometimes the dance and the music doesn't sync up, but it looks interesting because it was very awkward and thrown together, you know. Unfortunately, she suffered from a lot of mental illness and ended up in getting into trouble in the later parts of her life. And she actually died on my brother's birthday. I remember being in Florida with my brother, and she died on December 11th. That was his birthday, and I was like bummed out. I was like, no, Betty's dead. You know, but
right.
Yeah, I kind of
happy birthday though.
I wish I would have planned that tattoo better. I wish I would have planned a lot of my tattoos better. But
are there tattoos you regret?
Regret is not the right word. I just wish I had better foresight of plotting what I was doing. You know, like, okay, I'm going to get an entire chest piece instead of just like half of my chest tattoo. Like, why didn't I just fucking do the whole chest? I don't know.
And what was the tattoo you got at 18?
So there's this one on my shoulder that has leopard print on it. It's pink, purple, and black leopard print, because that's what you do when you're punk rock. You get leopard print tattoos.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
you got a whole. It's like, well, you got parts of your skin that are punks, parts that are rockabilly, parts that are metal.
Yeah,
parts that are goth.
Yeah. You're a musical canvas.
Yes, yes, you got a whole record store on your body.
Pretty much. I mean, music has been my number one love my whole life. So
hence, you married a musician.
Yes, he's a very brilliant musician.
It is Pride Month. And I did have to touch on your trans.
Yes, please.
Okay. I just want to, I'm treading lightly, but no, I just want to ask, if being a trans burlesque dancer, was there any pushback, or was it always been, have you always been accepted in the scene?
So my journey as a trans person is relatively new, I must admit. Well, it's not, but the discovery of where I fit is newer.
Okay.
My whole life, I have felt different, especially with my gender identity and gender expression. But no, I haven't gotten any weirdness or pushback from the burlesque community about being a transgendered performer at all, because I think one of the main forerunnings of burlesque, at least today, is inclusivity and bringing everybody in and including all bodies, all genders, all creeds, all races, all the gays, you know, like all of the things. So, and very quickly, if you are not one of those inclusive human beings, you're going to get kicked out, basically. Right. But
the reason I ask, and I figured that would be the case, but you've been doing it for 20 years. And as you know, 20 years ago was a lot different than it is now.
Absolutely. And I will say burlesque 20 years ago, especially in Oklahoma, definitely didn't have anything to do with anybody in masculine bodies. And I'm really glad that it's changed. And like the Burlesque Hall of Fame this year, actually the BHOF weekend, the Burlesque Hall of Fame weekend just happened. Mm-hmm. And the person that won was a transgendered woman. And that's really fucking big, because the competition in the past has been more focused on separating the genders.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of purposefully on that. And they've been hearing people going, you know, this doesn't fucking matter. Like, if you're a good performer, you're a good performer, and then you deserve the title. And what I love about what they're working on right now is allowing the person who has won the biggest title in the world to choose what their title is, be it king, queen, however they would like that to be presented. And it's really beautiful. And actually that alone has caused fucking problems with people getting upset that, you know, it's the whole TERF situation, and TERF being somebody who specifically is a woman, not being understanding of what a woman can be, who is embodying the title of being a woman. And I don't think it was necessarily malicious. I just think it was something, you know, everybody needs time and grace to learn these things. You know, the trans community is very complicated. The title and the term transgendered is very complicated. It's a huge umbrella. And I think, you know, actually when Nikki asked me if I was trans, I got a little defensive at first, because people don't understand it. So, and especially right now with the country, the way that it's leaning is terrifying. And like, it's very sad. It's a very sad situation, but it's super fucking nuanced. And I think that we need to give people time and grace to learn and to change and to integrate new ways of thinking and speaking before we freak out. You know,
well, that's a great way to put it, because it is nuanced, but the arguments are not. It's just people like, it has to be this way or this way. And there's no nuance at all.
Yeah. It's really tough, because it's like the person who won the amazing performer who won Burlesque Hall of Fame this last weekend was, you know, is a transgendered woman, but they're masculine presenting, they're masculine bodied. So that's what caused the stir, being like, well, we've we have fucking cultivated this safe space for women, and now men are infiltrating, and everyone's going, this is not a man, this is a trans woman, this person is a fucking trans woman, so what's the problem? Like, what are you talking about? So it's been this whole, like, I haven't weighed in on it, to be honest. I'm letting people do what they're doing about it, you know. But it's been interesting to sit back and watch this flood of, like, crazy shit about it.
Well, it's just, we're in a no pun intended transition period where, you know, people are just not, you know, like I said, I misgendered Sig, or did I don't know, but it's not malicious. I just don't know.
Well, even with Sig, when Sig and I are talking to each other, you have to try really hard to, if you're speaking about or to somebody that identifies as they, them, which I do, it's hard to integrate into the language because it's not grammatically correct. It's not what you're taught when you're growing up.
Right.
So it even integrating, being inclusive in language is tricky. So that's, I really try very hard to give grace to people, you know, and like, yes, I am transgendered. And that even, like, confuses people, like my therapist and stuff. They're like, well, what do you mean you're transgendered? You know, you're not like, you haven't changed your body. You haven't transitioned into anything. Aren't you transitioning? And I'm like, well, that's not everybody that's trans goes through transition, you know, like that's not the only part of the trans umbrella that exists.
Yeah.
So, like, I'm gender fluid.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I identify as gender chaotic. Like, I'm fucking all over the place. Like, sometimes sometimes I don't want to be curvy. Sometimes I don't want to look feminine at all, but this is how I look. This is how my body is. This is how I naturally am, but it's not a need that I have that outweighs changing who I am for the most part. And a lot of people need that. That's like, their life depends on it.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Well, I understand. Yeah.
So
gender chaotic's nice. I think you're onto something there. I like that.
I'm fucking, dude, I am a chaotic motherfucker. Like, I'm all over the place.
Just talking to you the last hour, I caught that. So that's good. You are definitely chaotic, in gender and otherwise. And the last thing we gotta talk about, because I could talk to you all day, all night. I think you're great. And Nicole, please chime in. Now, your website is all about you're doing tarot. And when did you start doing tarot cards?
I started reading tarot about 10 years ago at this point.
Okay.
That's
what attracted you to it. What brought your interest in?
Even that is very interesting.
Everything you say is interesting. You realize that.
It's very, everything is so fucking
interesting.
It's so interwoven.
You're chaotically interesting.
Thank you. I appreciate that. So it actually happened because I was living in this really haunted, fucked up place in Hollywood that I would like to write a film about, by the way. And I dreamt of a tarot card.
Oh,
and I didn't know what it was. I didn't know anything about the tarot. I didn't know anything at all. I knew, like, the basic, oh, there's a death card, like everything you see on a movie, you know, about tarot and how creepy it could be or whatever. I mean, I never had those thoughts about it, but I just didn't fucking know. And I was having trouble with somebody I was working with in the film industry at the time. And I had a dream of the Seven of Swords, and I was like, and it was a very fucking crazy dream, because not only did I dream of the tarot, but I also astral projected into my friend's dream and was like there with her and freaked her out, and then she stopped being my friend, actually. But in my dream I basically pulled this flaming card of the Seven of Swords from behind my back, and I started going, well, this feels more like a vision, or this feels bigger than just like having a random fucking dream. So I started looking into the card, like I started doing the Google and being like, what is this? And the Seven of Swords is a card about basically someone fucking you over. And there's a lot of explanation about that card, but it, long story short, it's, you know, the traditional Rider-Waite-Smith deck depicts a person walking away with swords that don't belong to them and it can't. Mm-hmm. And it's about somebody trying to get away with something or pulling the wool over your eyes or being secretive.
Right.
And
you know, there's no better resource for the occult than Google. So that's good.
It's all I had. I didn't know what to do. So I was just like, you know, I remember having a conversation with a burlesque dancer about it at the time. And she was like, well, this is very like huge. She was like, Kira, this sounds like it's like right on point with what's happening with you in your makeup life. And it very much was. So with the culmination of this haunting that I was experiencing, which was fucking horrific, and dreaming of this card, I walked my happy ass to Pan's, at the time in Hollywood, it was Pan Pipes, which is one of the longest running occult shops in the nation, ran by one of my very best friends. Her name is Vicky. She's incredible. Mm-hmm. I walked in there and I was like, I need help with getting rid of a haunting and I need a deck of tarot cards. Like, I don't know what I'm doing, but something's got to fucking change here. And I think that this is the place to be, you know? So I started pulling cards and it just, as it turns out, like I'm very good at it.
That's great.
Before you did tarot, did you have psychic visions? Did you foresee the future?
Yes. Mm. Yes. I started having severe predictions when I was a teenager. I started predicting death when I was a teenager. That was really freaky. It was one of the reasons why I'm always like presenting death, to be honest, because I'm obsessed with death. Death is always around me. I've lost a lot of people in my life. I'm very tapped into the other side, into the occult. I work with four different death deities.
And your look is very Sandman death. That did not escape me today.
Yes. I mean, the idea is if you're friends with death, then death doesn't kill you.
Mm.
Long story short. But yes, I started predicting death around the age of 16. I think that was the first time that I really realized that there was something going on with me with that. And I had all sorts of psychic visions and situations when I was a child growing up. I remember talking to my mom about like my dead grandmother that I'd never met. I remember like having full-on conversations with entities and stuff like that in my sleep. Like it's always been one of the biggest parts of me. Mm-hmm. But you know, being a punk rock kid, it's not cool to be like, there's like an afterlife. There's other sides to this situation. You know, everybody's an anarchist and nothing exists. And once you die, everything is gone and dead. But what really was the Kickstarter for this occult lifestyle was when I moved to this haunted apartment in Hollywood, and it just, I could no longer fucking ignore it.
Mm-hmm.
No longer.
No. Sounds like every apartment that I've ever been in Hollywood, to be honest with you.
But like,
including my own.
I stayed there for so long because it was cheap and it had high ceilings. Like, I probably would have stayed there forever, to be honest, even with the fucking low-level demonic piece of shit that was fucking haunting the space. Right. But
just to be clear, because your website is vonsutra.com if people want to get readings. You predict other things besides death.
Yes, I do. I predict all sorts of things. But I also really just like to put information in front of you that helps you to make decisions. You know, for instance, yesterday I just did a reading for my friend about his career. For the most part, I like to let the cards speak for themselves and put information in front of people that they can do something about. I don't like nonsense. I don't let nonsense in. If there's nothing they can do, then what the fuck is the point of talking about it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I always work in people's highest goods for divine love and divine truth only. I refuse to fucking let in any harshities from bullshit when I'm reading people's cards. But, you know, I've talked from everything from, I predict birth as well. It's not just death.
Oh, good,
I've predicted
good.
Several. I predicted my nephew. Like, I was sitting in my fucking bed one day and I just, it felt like somebody hit me in the head with a frying pan and said, read cards for your sister. And I was like, huh. And I pulled out these cards and I texted her. I was like, are you knocked up? And she was like, I don't know. And then 2 weeks later, she was like, yep, I'm knocked up. You know, I was like, wow, okay.
So I guess I can ask you, is Nicole pregnant?
I don't know. I don't know.
I'm not.
Okay. Oh, good. Okay. Now we know. Okay. Yeah. Kira, as I said, I could talk to you all day. Nicole, another winner. I love it. First off, we have so many mutual friends, and Kira is just fantastic. My goodness. I want to have her on every week.
Yeah, she was great.
I wouldn't hate it.
and Kira, please tell everybody everything you got going on, anything you want to promote, and you know, the floor is yours, whatever you'd like.
I'm a psychic medium. I do medium readings. I do regular readings. I do spell castings and healings. I'm a Reiki healer. Mm. I do long distance healings. I'm a painter. I'm working on a art show right now. The solo
I forgot
art show.
To mention that. I saw your art. It's really good.
Yeah, it's wild. I'm working on a solo art show that's going to be unveiled in Hollywood in November. I don't think I'm allowed to say which gallery it is at the moment, unfortunately, but okay. It will be in November in a gallery near a bar called Burgundy Room. That's all I'm going to say. And then...
How cryptic.
You can, right now, I don't have my tarot books open so that everybody can book themselves willy-nilly. If you would like mm-hmm. to book with me, get with me. You know, send me a message and I'll book you manually because I can't, like, my schedule is very chaotic. So I can't let other people dictate what I'm doing.
Everything about Kira is chaotic.
It's true. That's true. I'm chaotic, good and neutral, depending on the day. But
right.
What else? I guess that's it. I don't have any shows really lined up at the time. I am reading cards for a burlesque show here in Portland called Burly Nomicon at Coffin Club, which is the goth club here that's super cute and fun. I usually do that monthly. Either I'm in the show or I'm reading cards at the show. I guess that's it.
All right. Well, that's plenty. Yeah. And Kira, thank you so much for being on the show. Thank you so much for having me. This is so much fun. I mean, you're fantastic. You're beautiful, and you've got a potty mouth, and we encourage profanity. So I love it.
I can't help it.
And I don't know if you've read Nicole's, speaking of potty mouse, I don't know if you read Nicole's new poetry book, Slow Burn, but it's on lulu.com if you ever want to order it. Nicole, tell everybody about that and everything you got going on.
So you can get my new book on lulu.com. Just look up my name and it'll come up right away. I am on Facebook at Nicole H6 and on Instagram at Nicole Six Books.
Nice.
And I'm Goth Comedian on all social media. And I hope to be in Portland soon. Last time I was in Portland was at the Portland Comedy Festival. I did a show at Harvey's, which is below Harvey's. They had tunnels where they had people that were working on the railroad, Chinese people working on the railroad. And they wanted me to do a Halloween show. And then the pandemic hit and now they're closed. But I hope to be in Portland soon because I love Portland and everybody. Have a wonderfully creepy week. Bye.
Bye.